You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 9:59 a.m. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler. You're on.
Here on KBOO, that examines the current political divide in America from an Indigenous perspective, given by myself, Jacqueline Keeler, a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And I say this with every opening of every show. You know, we started this on January 6, 2022, exactly a year after thousands of supporters of former President Trump stormed the Capitol to contest President Biden's election and try to force another term for former President Trump. And here in Oregon, of course, we had our own storming of the Capitol by armed insurrectionists in Salem, defying COVID restrictions. So today on American Standoff, we're discussing the tragic mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas on Tuesday, when 19 children and two adults were killed by an 18-year-old man with a gun. The title of the show is You Are Doing Nothing and the Deadly Tragedy of the Politics of Jesus, Guns, and Babies. And I'll discuss the framing of this horrific event in this way. You Are Doing Nothing, of course, refers to a quote from Beto O'Rourke regarding what the Texas politicians are doing, particularly Texas Governor Abbott. And so on the show, American Standoff, we examine the connections between seemingly disparate events like this tragedy. This is the second shooting in 10 days, I guess, and their origins in white supremacy and the DNA of colonialism and the ongoing occupation of indigenous homelands in the United States. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I am your host, and this is the call-in show, so please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. Once again, for the second week in a row, we are reporting here on American Standoff. We're discussing another mass shooting, and it's just amazing. You know, the 19 children I have lost their lives to gun violence in Uvalde, Texas. These mass shootings must be seen as the outcome of the deadly and cynical politics of right-wing Republican politicians. The second half of the title of the show about Jesus, guns, and babies is in reference to Georgia candidate for governor Candace Taylor, who lost on Tuesday in the GOP primary for governor, but not before she promised to handcuff and even put before a firing squad county sheriffs who were not sufficiently conservative. And we've discussed on the show many times the county supremacy ideology, the belief that the sheriffs are the ultimate power within the boundaries of the county itself and are accountable according to old Anglo-Saxon law to the people of the county. And so this is what she is actually referencing in a GOP primary for governor in Georgia. So this is not, this is really part of the political discussion happening nationwide for Republican candidates. She made these promises to voters while driving a campaign bus emblazoned with the words Jesus, guns, and babies. And the other part, as I mentioned, the other part of the headline for this, the title for this episode, Texas Democratic candidate for Governor Beto O'Rourke, who confronted Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, Republican, at a press conference about the mass shooting on Wednesday at the elementary school. Well, the press conference was on Wednesday, saying, "You are doing nothing." He also said, "Totally predictable when you choose to do nothing, anything." He was forcibly removed with Republican politicians showering insults and jeers upon him. So in this episode of American Standoff, I'm your host, Jacqueline Huber. Originally I was going to take a look at the Second Amendment and its roots in the U.S.'s horrific history of slavery and genocide and what we can do about this. But what we're actually going to look at is why we can't change these laws. Why has nothing changed in the almost 10 years since the shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, and at Sandy Hook Elementary School? So and we're actually going to open with Senator Chris Murphy. He represents Sandy Hook Elementary School parents from Connecticut, and his comments in Congress about the Uvalde, Texas shooting.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Just days after a shooter walked into a grocery store to gun down African-American patrons, we have another Sandy Hook on our hands. What are we doing? There have been more mass shootings than days in the year. Our kids are living in fear every single time they set foot in a classroom because they think they're going to be next. What are we doing? Why do you spend all this time running for the United States Senate? Why do you go through all the hassle of getting this job, of putting yourself in a position of authority, if your answer is that as this slaughter increases, as our kids run for their lives, we do nothing? What are we doing? Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this. This isn't inevitable. These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else. Nowhere else do little kids go to school thinking that they might be shot that day. Nowhere else do parents have to talk to their kids, as I have had to do, about why they got locked into a bathroom and told to be quiet for 5 minutes just in case a bad man entered that building. Nowhere else does that happen except here in the United States of America, and it is a choice. It is our choice to let it continue. What are we doing? Sandy Hook Elementary School, after those kids came back into those classrooms, they had to adopt a practice in which there would be a safe word that the kids would say if they started to get thoughts in their brain about what they saw that day. If they started to get nightmares during the day, reliving stepping over their classmates' bodies as they tried to flee the school. In one classroom, that word was monkey. And over and over and over through the day, kids would stand up and yell, "Monkey!" And a teacher or a paraprofessional would have to go over to that kid, take them out of the classroom, talk to them about what they had seen, work them through their issues. Sandy Hook will never, ever be the same. This community in Texas will never, ever be the same. Why? Why are we here? If not to try to make sure that fewer schools and fewer communities go through what Sandy Hook has gone through, what Uvalde is going through. Our heart is breaking for these families. Every ounce of love and thoughts and prayers we can send, we are sending. But I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here. Work with us to find a way to pass laws that make this less likely. I understand my Republican colleagues will not agree to everything that I may support, but there is a common denominator that we can find. There is a place where we can achieve agreement that may not guarantee that America never ever again sees a mass shooting, that may not overnight cut in half the number of murders that happen in America. It will not solve the problem of American violence by itself, but by doing something, we at least stop sending this quiet message of endorsement to these killers whose brains are breaking, who see the highest levels of government doing nothing, shooting after shooting. What are we doing? Why are we here? What are we doing? I yield the floor.
So that was Senator Chris Murphy on the Texas school shooting asking, what are we doing? What are we doing after more than 10 years of inaction on gun control in Congress? Good morning. This is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show, so please do feel free to call in to the studio if you want to be part of this conversation at 503-231-8187. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I'm your host. I always start the show by introducing myself in my own language, in Dineh, Dinehfazad. My name is Jacqueline Keeler. In the Navajo way, we also introduce ourselves through our clans. My clan is Hia'ani Nishlet. That's the Towering House clan. And I am born for my father's people, the Yankton Sioux tribe, the Ihaktamon Dakota people. And I am also a citizen of the Navajo Nation. I'd also like to acknowledge that what we now call Portland, Oregon, is located on the ancestral lands of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Cayapuya, Molalla, and many other tribes. The question I ask every episode, and many of you may be familiar with this, is that in the more than a year that passed since January 6, 2021, when we all saw the Capitol stormed, what have we learned? This week we are in a country in mourning again for the senseless killing of children. I mean, and the adults that are there to teach them, not to be having to protect them from murder in front of their classmates. I am myself a mother. I definitely fear sending my children to school, and I can't imagine. You know, I don't want. It's just, and you know, we can't. It's astounding, and we're going to go through some of the numbers, just how different America is than other countries as far as the level of gun violence and death, and the fact that our children are being asked to die in order to support the Second Amendment in the Constitution, that our children have an incredibly much higher rate of death from guns than any other children in any developed country in the world. And so we're going to go through that and discuss that. What can be done about it? That's the other thing is, and why isn't anything being done about it? We're going to discuss that as well. And this definitely has, this is part of what we're describing here in American Standoff is a standoff of ideals that is holding all of us hostage and making us, and is seeing our children as sacrificable, like, you know, that they can be offered up to this. When children in other developed countries across the world do not have to do this. So we often lose track of what's normal because we're living in this large country and we don't really are close by other countries to come.
We lost you. Please stand by. We're having technical difficulties.
Excuse me.
Sit down.
You're out of line and an embarrassment.
Sit down and don't play this stuff.
The next shooting is right now, and you are doing nothing.
No, you need to get this out of here. This isn't a place to talk this over.
This is totally predictable when you...
Sir, you're out of line. Sir, you're out of line. Sir, you're out of line. Please leave this auditorium. I can't believe you're a sick son of a... It would come to a deal like this to make a political issue. It's on assholes like you. Why don't you get out of here?
This is Texas Governor Greg Abbott in June of last year signed.
Hi, am I on now? Yes. Okay. Sorry about that. We got cut off, and I had to call back in. So this is Jacqueline Keeler, and I am the host of American Standoff, and today we are discussing the tragic mass shooting at Uvalde in Texas, I'm sorry about the cut off. I don't know what happened. You know, the question I ask every episode of American Standoff is, what have we learned in the year that has passed since January 6th, 2021? And here we find ourselves facing 2 weeks in a row mass shootings. And because the Republican, policies that are making guns more available. And so yesterday, Texas Democrat Beto O'Rourke confronted Governor Greg Abbott at a press conference and accused the governor of doing nothing about gun violence in the wake of a mass shooting at another elementary school again. And so Abbott, flanked by law enforcement officers and fellow Republican lawmakers, had just given an update on the Uvalde, Texas shooting on Wednesday, and in which he claimed that mental health was the root cause of the deadly event. And O'Rourke approached the stage and said, "Governor Abbott, I have to say something." He is running for the Democratic nomination to challenge Abbott in November's elections. And he said, the time to stop the next shooting is right now, and you are doing nothing. So it's difficult to hear all of what O'Rourke is saying in the audio, because he was not mic'd, and he was also being jeered and shouted down by those on stage who were speaking into microphones. The hashtag Boss Hog was trending on Twitter yesterday to describe these sort of white, good old boy Texas politicians that were on the dais. And among those attempting to speak over O'Rourke was Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a Republican, who told the former El Paso congressman to sit down and that he was a, quote, embarrassment. And Uvalde Mayor Don McLaughlin, he played the Beto O'Rourke. Oh, great. So thank you. You can hear him in the audio. You probably heard him in the audio saying, "I can't believe you're a six on a date B that would come to deal like this to make a political issue." So when O'Rourke yelled toward the stage, "It's on you," McLaughlin replied, "It's on." I can't repeat what he said. "Like you, why don't you get out of here?" So then O'Rourke was escorted out of the event by security. So. You know, I think that many of us looked at Beto O'Rourke, and it is very unusual to have a candidate confront a sitting governor like that at a time like this. But at the same time, you know, outrage is justified, and so we are going to look at tying the lack of stricter gun laws and the loosening of them that has particularly been led by Governor Abbott, and. So that's what we're going to take a look at. So let's listen to a discussion on MSNBC with Robin Thomas. She's the executive director of the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, about Texas Governor Greg Abbott's reduction of barriers to gun ownership in Texas that made it easier for the gunman to access a semi-automatic and kill more children and adults more quickly.
This is Texas Governor Greg Abbott in June of last year signing 7 laws that made it easier to own a gun in Texas. That was all part of a slew of legislation that he signed loosening gun restrictions in the state, and one of the laws makes it legal to carry handguns in public without a license for anyone over 21. Now, prior to that, Texans needed to take a 4 to 6 hour training course. They had to pass a written exam. They had to pass a shooting proficiency exam, or at least demonstrate that they have shooting proficiency. Abbott's signature eliminated all of that. Another one of those laws declared Texas a sanctuary state for guns, which basically forbids local agencies from enforcing federal gun laws. So perhaps it is fitting that this week, on Friday, Greg Abbott is scheduled to speak at a big NRA forum in Houston, a forum on legislative action. Other notable speakers on the schedule for that event are Donald Trump, who is the headliner, of course, Senator John Cornyn and Senator Ted Cruz. Although tonight, Senator Cornyn's office told NBC News that he is no longer attending that forum. They say his cancellation has nothing to do with the shooting. He just has to be in D.C. for personal reasons on Friday. As far as we know, Abbott and Trump and Cruz are all still planning to attend it. And who knows, maybe they are going to use the opportunity to advocate for, I don't know, simple common sense gun control laws, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they'll do it directly to the NRA itself, but I got to be honest with you, I don't think so. I mean, listen to what Senator Ted Cruz had to say this afternoon.
You know, inevitably, when there's a murder of this kind, you see politicians try to politicize it. You see Democrats and a lot of folks in the media whose immediate solution is to try to restrict the constitutional rights of law-abiding citizens. That doesn't work. It's not effective. It doesn't prevent crime. We know what does prevent crime, which is going after felons and fugitives and those with serious mental illness. A arresting them, prosecuting them when they try to illegally buy firearms?
Here's an idea, Senator. Texas currently does not require background checks for guns sold or traded at gun shows. So if you want to prevent felons from getting their hands on guns, fixing that sounds like a layup. I mean, the reality here is it is incredibly easy to access a gun perfectly legally in Texas. That's the truth. The Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence gives Texas gun laws an F, literally an F. They point out that it is so easy to get guns in Texas that gangs actually smuggle them across the border into Mexico. They buy them in Texas, smuggle them into Mexico. That's how easy it is to get them in Texas. Texas State Senator Rolando Gutierrez told NBC News tonight that in a briefing with Texas State Rangers, Rangers said that the shooter in Uvalde purchased two assault rifles on his 18th birthday legally. The shooter turned 18 last Monday. Now here we are today. Laws matter. Joining us now is Robin Thomas, Executive Director at the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence.
Part of it is exactly what Ted Cruz was just talking about, which is that for one thing, politicians are in the pocket of the NRA and the gun lobby and special interests. They don't represent the interests of their constituents. They don't act in the interests of public safety. They do what the lobbyists tell them to do. And in part, they get away with it because they're willing to lie. I mean, most of what Ted Cruz just said is simply not true. But because he doesn't get called out with the facts, he's able to somehow convince people that these laws don't matter. And as you so correctly pointed out, of course laws matter. Texas's gun death rate is far higher than California's, where we have much more comprehensive gun regulation. Laws matter very much. But if people don't believe that, if they don't see it, if they aren't given good information by the people who represent them, then they may not be aware. They buy this ridiculous argument about the good guy with the gun being the solution, as opposed to smart regulation every other country in the world has somehow figured out.
And they point to Chicago and say that, oh, you know, Chicago or Illinois have some of the toughest gun restriction laws, but the gun violence in Chicago is continually high, and gun violence is skyrocketing.
And part of the reason for that is because we have porous state borders. That's why we need federal reform, because all of those illegal guns that are being found in the city of Chicago, the guns that are being found in Washington, D.C., and New York City, they're coming from states with weak gun laws. In the same way that the gangs in Texas, in Mexico, are coming to Texas to buy guns because the laws are so weak, it's the same thing in Chicago. Mm-hmm. These guns are being trafficked from states like Indiana, where there are weak laws, and it's very, very easy to just bring the guns into the city of Chicago.
Sorry about that. I was muted. Sorry. So there you just heard Robin Thomas, Executive Director at the Giffords Law Center, discussing the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, discussing Texas Governor Greg Abbott's reduction of barriers to gun ownership in Texas and how this has made the situation more probable and easier for the 18-year-old murderer to mass murderer to gain access to semi-automatic weaponry. And a large amount of ammunition as well. Even more enlightening is PRI The World's interview with Harvard researcher David Hemingway on how laws impact gun violence.
This only happens in this country and nowhere else.
By the numbers, Murphy is right. Gun deaths in the U.S. are off the charts compared with other rich nations. David Hemingway knows all about this. He's the director of the Harvard Injury Control Research Center, which collects and analyzes gun violence data. David, Senator Chris Murphy highlighted the U.S. as exceptional when it comes to gun violence. What does the data say?
Well, what the data indicate is that when you compare the United States to the other high-income countries, we are an average country in terms of most crime and most violence, in terms of assaults, in terms of sexual assaults, in terms of robbery and so forth. If you look at our high school students, they don't seem very different than other high school students in all sorts of measures in terms of violence. But where we are so different is in terms of guns. We have by far the most guns. We have particularly by far the most handguns and by far the most military weapons, which are in civilian use. And we have the weakest gun laws. The United States, a child, for example, in the United States, we're looking at the 5 to 14-year-olds, which is K through 8, elementary school, middle school. And you pick those because it's so hard to blame the victim.
Why are you leaving? He kicked you out, but why are you leaving?
Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, site of the tragic Sandy Hook school shooting, spoke about this latest tragedy.
These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else.
By the numbers, Murphy is right. Gun deaths in the U.S. are off the charts compared with other rich nations. David Hemingway knows all about this. He's the director of the Harvard Injury Control Research Center, which collects and analyzes gun violence data. David, Senator Chris Murphy highlighted the U.S. as exceptional when it comes to gun violence. What does the data say?
Well, what the data indicate is that when you compare the United States to the other high-income countries, we are an average country in terms of most crime and most violence, in terms of assaults, in terms of sexual assaults, in terms of robbery and so forth. If you look at our high school students, they don't seem very different than other high school students in all sorts of measures in terms of violence. But where we are so different is in terms of guns. We have by far the most guns. We have particularly by far the most handguns and by far the most military weapons, which are in civilian use. And we have the weakest gun laws. The United States, a child, for example, in the United States, we're looking at the 5 to 14-year-olds, which is K through 8, elementary school, middle school. And you pick those because it's so hard to blame the victim, and there's so much victim blaming in the United States. A child in the United States is more likely to be murdered with a gun than children in, you know, Japan or England or France or Norway or Australia. And it's not like 50% higher or twice as high or three times as high. It's 20 times higher. And the same way, if you look at suicide, firearm suicide deaths, a child in the United States is like 10 times more likely to commit suicide with a firearm. These are 5 to 14-year-olds. And of course, maybe 20 times more likely to have an unintentional firearm death.
So in your research, is it as simple as more guns equals more gun violence?
That seems to be the variable that is the most, that changes the most across countries. It's not like some countries have horrible, rich countries have a lot of people who are mass murderers. People, as I mentioned, have similar rates of general violence. Guns make violence lethal. They make it so easy to kill. So, for example, in the United States, if you compare our police to, say, German police, a police officer in the United States is 30 times more likely to be killed on the job as a police officer in Germany. And why is that? Because how do you kill police? The only way you kill them basically is with guns. And we have lots of guns. And not surprisingly, citizens in the United States are about 30 times more likely than citizens in Germany per capita to be killed by police. Why? Because police are afraid, for good reason, because they could get killed in an instant. If you look within states in the United States, states in the United States which have fewer guns and stronger laws do much better than the states which have lots of guns and weaker laws. You can see this in terms of the school shootings and the mass shootings, but you can also see it like in terms of police. Where are police likely to get killed in the United States? And the answer is in the states where there's lots of guns. Where are citizens likely to get killed by police? In the states where there's lots of guns.
Can a nation have guns and fewer gun homicides? I mean, do you see a country that has both?
The answer is, it seems to be yes. Countries which have a fair number of guns tend to do a little worse than countries with almost no guns, but it's the differences across, like a lot of European countries, it's not that huge differences, except maybe for England, about how many guns there are. And so where you can see, it's easy to see differences is when the number of guns is so differently great, and also the gun laws are so different, and that's, the United States is sort of by itself. In the United States, it's harder when there are more guns, but you know, one of the things that we study is how you can have, how we could live with guns. Since we're going to have lots of guns, how can we live with guns? Right now we're dying with guns, and there's lots of reasonable policies that could make it so that we have lots of guns and still don't kill ourselves so often.
The U.S. is off the charts with gun ownership. Australia often comes up as a model for how to change. We need to go back to 1996 and the mass shooting in Tasmania. Help us understand how Australia managed to change the path they were on.
And the key thing, I believe, in Australia after the Tasmania, after the Port Arthur shootings, was that you had a conservative prime minister.
John Howard.
Not some sort of liberal lefty prime minister, but a conservative prime minister who basically said, enough is enough. And they said, the first thing we're going to do is try to stop these mass shootings by buying back mandatorily these weapons which can kill lots of people quickly. And they did that, and basically mass shootings, there weren't any mass shootings for about the next 25 years. It's incredible. But then they did something else much more important, I think, in the long run, which is they said, we're going to strengthen our gun laws, but we're going to harmonize our gun laws, is what they said. It's going to have similar strong gun laws across all the states. And I would think no rich country wants to end up like the United States in terms of our gun issues.
You're on.
Sorry, I was muted there. Sorry about that. There you were listening to Harvard researcher David Hemingway on how laws really can impact levels of gun violence and just how strikingly different America is to the rest of the world. You heard him say there that that the rate of death for students, children from kindergarten to eighth grade is 20 times higher, the rate of death by guns, than children in other developed countries across the world. And so 20 times, he was like, not twice, not four times, not 10 times, 20 times higher. That is a significantly greater rate of death for our children in from kindergarten to eighth grade. Once again, this is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is American Standoff. Forgive me, we're having a bit of a rough show today. I've had different snafus. I lost audio for a moment there, and I'd like to apologize for that. I would also like to encourage folks to call in to the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. We're presenting a lot of material here. That one was particularly lengthy because I wanted to get in a lot of the data about what can be done, what has worked, and how different the United States is regarding the levels of gun violence we're facing. Sometimes we can begin to think that this is, you know, we become inured to it. We become numb. We hear it over and over again, another mass shooting, and we just begin to sort of become the blur, right? We need to know what can be done, what should be done, I should say. I don't know that it actually can be done in the present political setup. And once again, we're going to be examining how the structure of the Senate prevents action and allows these sort of minority viewpoints of this worship of the Second Amendment to prevail and to see our children. To see our children as sacrificable to this ideology, and it's something that most Americans don't agree with, and it also is something that that is completely it's murderous and inhuman to hold these kinds of political policy viewpoints. And so Anyway, once again, this is Jacqueline Keeler. Please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And so call and let us know, what do you think of this present state of affairs, and how can we change it? Beto O'Rourke also addressed the responsibility that he put on the in the hands of Governor Abbott and other Texas Republican politicians on lax gun control, and how this played into the deaths, the unnecessary deaths and tragedy and trauma of these children in their schools, in the classroom. So here he is interviewed after he was ejected from Governor Abbott's press conference.
Because these kids died because the governor of the state of Texas, the most powerful man in the state, chose to do nothing. He went to Santa Fe High School after kids were killed in their classrooms, told the parents he would do something. He did nothing. He came to my hometown of El Paso after 23 people were slaughtered. He said he was going to do something. He did nothing. In fact, the only thing he did was make it easier to buy a gun. The only thing he did was make it easier to carry a gun in public. And he bragged about the fact that there would be no background check, no training, no vetting whatsoever. You know, he talked about that this was evil. The only thing evil is what he continues to do to the people of this state. He says this was unpredictable. It was totally predictable, and I predict this will continue to happen when you continue to have a governor who will not stand up for the people of Texas. His only interest is the gun lobby. He's scheduled to speak at the NRA convention this Friday in Houston, Texas, just days after these kids were slaughtered right here in Uvalde. After they were slaughtered at Santa Fe High School, at Sutherland Springs, in Midland, Odessa, in El Paso, Texas, five of the worst mass shootings in U.S. history right here in this state in the last 5 years, he was governor for every single one of them. And after every one of these, he holds a press conference just like this. And I wish to hell, when he came to El Paso, someone would have stood up and held him to account and confronted him and shocked the conscience of this state into doing something, because if we do nothing, we will continue to see this year after year, school after school, kid after kid. This one is on all of us. It's on every single one of us to do something. So I'm here to stand up for the people of Texas.
He said mental health was broken here.
We are 50th. We are 50th in the nation in mental health care access. 50th. There are only 50 states in the nation. We are dead last. The number one provider of mental health care services under Greg Abbott in the state of Texas is the county jail system in the state of Texas. The largest inpatient mental health care facility in the state of Texas is the Harris County Jail in downtown Houston, Texas. He's refused to expand Medicaid, which would bring $10 billion a year, including mental health care access for people who need it. He's refused to champion red flag laws. When somebody says that they are having trouble, that they may kill somebody, they may kill themselves, a red flag law would protect the public. He's refused to support safe storage laws so young people cannot get their hands on their parents' guns. He's refused to support a ban on AR-15s and AK-47s. This 18-year-old who just turned 18 bought an AR-15 and took it into an elementary school and shot kids in the face and killed them. Why are we letting this happen in this country? Why is this happening in this state? Year after year, city after city, this is on all of us if we do not do something, and I am gonna do something, and I'm not alone. The people of Texas are with us. The majority of the people of Texas are with us, but we've gotta stand up to this, or we just accept this theater and business as usual, and we accept the next shooting. We could have stopped this if we had stood up after Santa Fe High School, if we had stood up after El Paso. We are gonna stop the next one. We're standing up right here in Uvalde, Texas right now. That's why I'm here. So the people of Texas want right now, that's what we're gonna focus on.
What can be done next year?
There are more guns.
What can be done next year?
So that was Democratic governor, candidate for governor Beto O'Rourke, addressing, just got talking to the press after he was ejected from Governor Abbott's press conference on Wednesday about the Uvalde mass shooting at the elementary school in Texas. So thank you for listening. Please do call in. We are a call-in show. It'd be great to get callers. If you want to be part of this conversation, at 503-231-8187. All things considered, also interviewed Senator Chris Murphy, and more about the lack of progress made by Congress on gun violence, on gun control since Sandy Hook. He is the governor from Connecticut, and Sandy Hook Elementary, Newton, Connecticut, is part of his district. So let's listen to some of that audio.
In the decades since that terrible day, he has been trying to pass gun control legislation. He spoke about the shooting and the failure of that legislation on the Senate floor yesterday.
But I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here. Work with us to find a way to pass laws that make this less likely.
Senator Murphy joins us now.
Well, I mean, the first thing I think about is those families in Sandy Hook who relive their nightmare every time that one of these mass shootings happens, in particular shooting in a school. And having been there at the emergency location site at Sandy Hook that day, I know what last night looked like. I know how grisly that is, the process of identifying these bodies. These kids don't have IDs on them, and so it's their parents who have to identify their children. I also know what an AR-15 does to the bodies of these children. Many of them were probably not recognizable, and I know this is so hard to hear, it's hard for me to say, but this country has to sort of come to grips with the reality of what these mass shootings look like. It was Emmett Till's open casket that changed the civil rights debate, and I hope that we don't have to show Americans what these kids' bodies look like, shot by semi-automatic weapons, in order to change public opinion here. But I can't imagine what those families are going through, and the Sandy Hook families are going through a lot today as well.
So let me ask you, how do you even meaningfully revive the gun control conversation inside the Senate after that?
I think I came to understand that there are very few epiphanies. There are very few moments where a right turn happens in American politics. It's really about political power. How much do you have? How much does the other side have? And in 2013, you know, the modern anti-gun violence movement didn't exist. All these groups that we think about today, from March for Our Lives to Gabby Gifford's group, Moms Demand Action, they didn't exist. But the gun lobby did, the NRA did, and they just were more powerful than we were in 2013. So what we've been doing for the last 10 years is building up our own power. We're a significant political organization. The NRA is weaker today than they were. And maybe that balance of power, political power today, much more even than it was in 2013, will allow us to get something done. That's my task.
Do you really believe that? Do you really what are your conversations like now with your colleagues who don't support gun control legislation? What are they saying to you right now?
Well, you know, they trot out all the same tropes. You know, first, that this is a mental illness problem, not a gun problem. Second, that, you know, we can solve this by putting more weapons in our schools. So they come up with all sorts of other things that we should be working on. And I admit, there's a really narrow path to getting 60 votes in the Senate right now, and maybe I'm a fool for being the eternal optimist, but I'm just going to stay at it for these next few days, the next week.
So you do think that you will be able to garner some support from the other side in the next few weeks? You really think that something will change?
So as we're talking, we're trying to figure out a process by which over the next week, Republicans and Democrats, a group of us, can sit down and try to hammer out a compromise. I will tell you, I think the chances are, you know, well less than 50-50 that we will find that compromise, because there are probably four or five Republicans who would fairly easily support some common sense measures. Tougher to find the next five that would get you to 60. But the truth of the matter is, if there were more Democrats here and less Republicans, we would be able to pass this legislation. If voters went to the polls and decided not to keep reelecting people who don't support universal background checks, we could solve this issue pretty easily. So in the end, this is Congress's responsibility, but it is also the voters' responsibility.
So that was Senator Chris Murphy being interviewed on NPR about the lack of progress made by Congress on gun control since the Sandy Hook massacre almost 10 years ago. We have a caller. I would like to welcome Linda to our show.
Thank you. Hi. I'm calling in to address sort of another side of gun violence, other than mass shootings, which, of course, are horrendous. I had a daughter who bought a gun and used it to commit suicide. She killed herself right on my bed, and I found her there, having bled out. She had a history in the mental health system, had been in and out of facilities, had had several other suicide attempts, and yet she was able to walk into a gun store right close to our house and buy a gun and use it to kill herself. I think that that's another aspect of, you know, when there are people in who have mental health issues and have been shown to be suicidal, there should be a list. You know, she was involved with the police. She was in mental health facilities. Her name could easily have been put on a list of people who really shouldn't be able to buy a gun for their own protection, or, you know, if she's feeling that crazy, she could have used it on somebody else. And yet she was able to do it, you know. So that's another side of it. People with mental health issues, there should be some kind of, you know, record kept. And if they want to buy a gun, just, like, don't let them do it either.
Yes, yes. I totally agree. That is a big part of it. I mean, most of the deaths are due to not to mass shooting, but to suicide and accidental. Yes. I really would like to send my condolences to you.
Thank you.
Horrible. Yeah. Oh my God. As a parent, you watch. We need better mental health care in this country. That really.
Absolutely.
It's just we don't. Yeah. Here in Oregon, what are the laws regarding that?
Regarding whether there's a record kept if someone's been suicidal, you mean, in terms of buying guns? I don't think there are any. I'm not totally sure. I looked into it, but it was early after her death, and I can't remember a lot of the stuff because I was kind of crazy at that point. I think if there are any, they are obviously not being, you know, kept up with. You know, they're not. Nobody's checking on what gun stores are doing in terms of, do they look into some sort of database, and do they, you know, keep from selling to someone in that database? I know that's not happening, and I'm not sure if there even is a database that would give them that information. There certainly should be. As people who have had a history of violence against others, people who've had a history of violence to themselves should also be on a list where you just go like, nope, sorry, you know, if you're going to kill yourself, you're not going to use one of my guns, and I'm not going to sell you one.
Thank you so much for calling in. I mean, it's just, I can't, for taking this moment to really, you know, to share your tragedy, your personal story about, you know, as a mother of a daughter myself, I can't.
Yeah. It's the saddest thing, you know. And I'm glad that your daughter is alive and well, and I wish you well.
Thank you. And I wish, I hope that, you know, if folks listening can, we really hear the fact that this can happen here in Oregon. We need to talk to our legislators. We need to make sure that the laws are being enforced, and that that people who sell guns are more highly regulated, and that they should be following the law, and that there should be assisted to report violations of the law, we have a democratic controlled legislature. We can get these laws passed, and we should. And make sure that they are enforced strictly, because the death rates, as was mentioned earlier, are quite high for Americans. And I think statistics here, 2020 data shows that gun violence was the leading cause of death for young people under the age of 25. And young people under 30 were nearly 10 times more likely to die by a firearm than from COVID-19 in 2020, 10 times more likely.
Yes, so, you know, my daughter was in her late 20s.
and she died.
Yeah.
And so, thank you so much for having a show about this issue. I appreciate it so much. You're really doing important work.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing your story. And I hope that your daughter, you know, I hope that, you know, her death, you know, that you know, other parents' children can, you know, have, because we, you know, we're just human beings. We're just, you know, our brains, we having access to a weapon like this, you know, is really, really increases the, you know, chance that the people will not be there anymore for us, you know, our loved ones. And so I'd just like to thank you for sharing that. And I hope that it helps change the situation. So, yeah. Anyway, that was, we are, we just had a parent whose daughter was able to purchase a gun, even though, you know, that there should be some sort of mental health check involved in the sale of guns and what is happening here in the state of Oregon as well. And this isn't just an issue in Texas or in red states, but it's an issue here as well. And so, you know, please, I do encourage the audience to get involved here at the state level and see what can be done about it. We're sort of running, in the last 4 minutes, I just like to say that, that I was going to do a clip from MSNBC, addressing how ridiculous, and deadly the GOP solution to gun violence is, which is basically arming more citizens, right? They just say, well, more guns into the hands of the good guys to stop this, right? And of course, that does not address at all the issue of suicide, you know, and other uses of guns to kill Americans. And that is, I had seen a very interesting tweet by Steve Inskeep from NPR, and he said the U.S. has 87,498 elementary schools. If the answer is armed guards, each needs enough trained and armed to face a gunman in body armor, say four, right? And of course, at Uvalde in Texas, they had a number of armed. They had, I think, two armed guards on staff. They had a whole system in place, a safety system to lock down classrooms. And then they also had, they also just happened to pass by because they are by the border. And some of the, they regularly see border patrol coming, chasing, and this is horrific, also chasing people who are trying to seek a better life here in the United States. And down the street, and so there was an armed sort of border guard group there that were on site right away, and so he's saying that if you need four at each school, and we have 87,498 elementary schools, that means that we would need 349,992 armed guards at elementary schools across the United States. And that's just elementary schools. We're not discussing junior high, middle school, you know, high school, just elementary schools. Almost 350,000 armed guards. And that is more than the army, he notes, that occupied Iraq, right? He's saying that's not for or against the idea. It's just what it is. So often these solutions are presented, you know, like, oh, we just need to arm everybody. You know, teachers need to be armed. Everyone needs to be armed, right? And that's a solution. But, you know, where does it end? And how, you know, does this even work, right? You know, there was a 40-minute period that went by when they actually, the armed guards actually spoke to the killer before he entered and barricaded himself inside the classroom. You know, they had a moment there where they could have stopped it, you know, but they did not. And so how effective is this? It's not that effective at all, right? And then we are faced with this tragedy and with the horror of parents who have sent their children to school having to give their DNA in order to identify their children, because what a military-grade weapon like that does to a classroom of children at close range. Some of the children are not identifiable, right? And I mean, it's horrific to bring this up, but we have to realize that this is not just another thing. You know, this is just not another school. I mean, it's we can't brush this aside. And then the other issue is that the trauma that the other children face, who's the survivors who saw their classmates shot at close range, and what that did to them. This is something we need to stop. And as Senator Chris Murphy said, that, you know, they need more votes. And of course, as we discussed in previous episodes of American Standoff, the structural system, the way it's set up, gives representation to very small groups of Americans. And